us for Wealth Management Group's quarterly market update call. On the phone today is Craig Bolanos, founder and CEO of Wealth Management Group. Craig, the call is yours.
Lisa, thank you, and to all of our clients across the country, thank you for dialing in for our quarterly conference call. Well, I got to say, markets are off to a strong start in 2019. We definitely have a slowing, but it is a growing global economy. Add to that now the fact that we have what I deem to be some patient policymakers in lieu of the fact that the Fed has made a dovish pivot point. And at the end of the day, you know, where do we go from here after a tremendous start to 2019? So I thought, who better than to be joined on the phone this morning by Daniel Coppins, director and portfolio strategist at the world's largest asset manager, BlackRock. Specifically, Daniel's responsible for developing and managing outcome-oriented investment solutions for both institutional and retail investors alike. And Daniel, I'd like to turn the call over to you for you to go ahead and express what you guys are seeing, what the outlook is, you know, bring us up to speed again on what happened in the depths of despair in the fourth quarter of 2018, what helped create this tremendous snapback rally that's happened thus far in 2019, and where is BlackRock, and specifically your role in multi-strategies, where are you guys uncovering value for shareholders and investors going forward? So with that, Daniel, we'll bring the call over to you.
Hey, Craig, and good morning, everybody. Thanks for having me on. And, yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. What's really surprising to us is, and what really stands out is this amazingly stark contrast between what we saw in markets in the fourth quarter and what we've seen here in the first quarter and now into April. When you look back into the fourth quarter a few months, it really was a night and day story. You go back to the middle through the third quarter of last year, markets were doing pretty darn well, especially here in the U.S. Growth was strong enough where the Federal Reserve was essentially on autopilot in terms of their expectation for rising rates, for their expectations for hitting their inflation targets, and for their expectations for just kind of overall global growth numbers. And things changed very quickly, as we all know. October came around, some uncertainty started to develop, and December really was one of the worst sell-offs that we've seen in quite some time. And in fact, the fourth quarter for U.S. stocks was actually the worst quarter that we've had in terms of total returns since the financial crisis. Now, where do we stand today? As you noted, Craig, we've had one of the best first quarters in recent memory, one of the strongest we've had in the last about 10 years. So what really did change was a few things. One is we have had a complete 180 pivot by the Fed in terms of their expectations for rising interest rates, where their expectations for two hikes in 2019, the median expectation is actually down to zero for 2019, and the market itself is now pricing in a greater chance of a cut in 2019 than a hike. That is in complete contrast to where we were only three, 4 months ago, when many firms on Wall Street were predicting three or four hikes in 2019. So one very big difference that has helped propel stocks higher and has helped propel not only riskier areas of the fixed income market higher, but also more interest rate sensitive sectors like treasuries and bonds. I would also note, too, that it seems as if the market has gotten over their anxieties around the threat of a near-term recession. When you think about not only the market and what returns did in the fourth quarter, sentiment was abysmal. You saw some consumer confidence surveys start to come down off of their, not necessarily their highs, but we were still close to the cycle highs. You saw tremendous amounts of outflows from equity funds, from fixed income funds, into things like money markets and more kind of cash safe haven type vehicles. And this anxiety of around a near-term recession, we think, was completely overblown. When you look back and you look at fundamentals, when you look at the bottoms-up earnings growth expectations, when you look at corporate strength, et cetera, and a whole host of other indicators, we really didn't feel that anything had changed to justify the sell-off that we saw in the fourth quarter, and more notably for the majority of December. And what has happened now is I think the market's come around to that, especially the institutional money that has really driven asset prices higher. And across the board, not only in stocks, but also most areas of fixed income, we are back to levels that we saw before the sell-off. So you cannot underestimate the veracity of the snapback, and it's something that's very telling to us. That says the market in general has come a long way in realizing that maybe earnings growth isn't going to slow down as much as the market expected. Maybe areas like Europe aren't as in bad a place as the market expected. Maybe the market is a little bit more optimistic around trade deal with China getting done. Maybe Brexit isn't going to have the negative as large of a negative impact, et cetera. So it's just a complete 180, and that stark contrast between the first and fourth quarter is really what stands out to us. Now, one more comment I would make, however, is it really does seem that markets may be telling two contrasting stories. So we all in the U.S. and as investors tend to look at stock markets as a bellwether for what to expect from an economic perspective, et cetera. And with rising stock prices, that really suggests to us continued growth, right? However, when you look at rising bond prices, so the fact that the 10-year Treasury, for example, has gone from over 3% to down to 2.5% today in very short order, the bond market's kind of telling us that they're maybe expecting or a little bit more concerned about recession probabilities. So it's a little bit of a contrasting story for us as portfolio managers and kind of trying to figure out who's right. Is it the stock market? Is it the bond market? And that's one of the things that we're tasked with day in and day out, is really trying to tiptoe or create a balancing act between which market we feel is more correct. And as Craig alluded to, while growth is certainly moderating, we simply view this as a reversion back to levels seen for much of this economic cycle, not something more sinister. And the threat of that near-term recession is low in our view. And as I mentioned, fundamentals remain supportive. Major central banks remain very accommodative, not only here in the U.S. with this pivot by the Fed, but also think about the European Central Bank, the Bank of Japan, staying very easy in terms of monetary policy. And we do think that policy stimulus in areas like China should continue to support positive growth, albeit at lower levels. So our base case still remains cautiously positive. We still continue to believe that that recession risk remains low, but that strength and the speed of the rally, in our view, warrants staying very level-headed, especially relative to your objectives, especially if you're more of a risk-averse or more conservative type of investor. And while stocks may continue to move higher from here, we think there's a little bit more asymmetry built into the market today. And what I mean by that is, with this tremendous rally we've seen in stocks and with still some of the uncertainties that are on the horizon, we think that, yes, stocks may go higher from here, but there's the potential also that for them now to drop even more. And it is our view that because we're in the 10th year of this cycle, because we've moved as strong off the bottoms as we have so rapidly from the fourth quarter, in our portfolios, we are very comfortable running more modest levels of volatility than we were in the first month or two of this year. And we do believe that clients should really start thinking about fixed income in their portfolios as a way to add some ballast or resilience into portfolios after so many years of clients maybe looking for areas of credit or higher yielding or higher risk areas of the fixed income markets, we really do think that clients should start thinking more about core bonds, treasuries, high quality investment grade bonds, et cetera, to start adding some ballast into portfolios at this stage of the game.
No, I think that makes an awful lot of sense. So, I mean, you know, really, when I add to those talking points that you shared, Daniel, and I'm going to share some of the themes that we've been incorporating for all the families we represent on this call in 2019, but in the big backdrop, we just need to make sure that this global economy stays strong enough to avoid sparking any recessionary fears, but likewise, the global economy needs to stay weak enough to keep the policymakers on hold. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, I couldn't have said it better myself. And certainly there's a lot of pressure on the Fed, for example, by the administration and others that you may read in the journal or CNBC, that the Fed should be cutting rates. We think that's a little bit premature. We are totally in the camp that you do not want to overheat at this point, because what happens? We get right back to where we were last year when people thought growth was going to stay strong enough to warrant multiple more hikes in 2019 and again in 2020. You start to stoke the inflation figures, et cetera, and what happens? Then the Fed has to come back in and raise rates maybe more quickly or to a greater extent than what the market can handle, and we just go round and round and round. So we're of the view that let's see how the first quarter earnings shake out here in the U.S., which start next week, basically, in earnest, mostly with the financial firms who tend to report early. But by no means is global growth in anywhere near escape velocity when you have Europe still in the economic doldrums. Major economies in Europe like Germany and France teetering on the edge of recession. We think they'll hopefully be able to stay out. Japan is certainly not doing anything spectacular in terms of growth. And then, as I mentioned before, China is certainly kind of trending towards slowing. They've taken some measures to potentially kind of stabilize their economy, get it growing again, reducing reserve requirements for banks, easing lending standards, et cetera. So let's see how some of this shakes out before doing anything drastic like cutting rates from here. That's our opinion.
No, I think that's great. And I loved what you said that, you know, at the end of the day, your confidence, you know, thus far in 2019 has increased, that the economy can just stay in what we call this late cycle phase of growth, meaning there is no recession coming in 2019. But that being said, we just need to be ever so more vigilant, as you mentioned, asymmetrical risk from here, that if there was any decline in U.S. or a decline in global growth, that could spark another large sell-off, maybe akin to what we saw in the fourth quarter. And likewise, we need to be really careful looking at those policymakers, because if there is any more of what I call a hawkish shift, if we go pivot again the other way, that too could have a similar effect. But realistically, your firm's base case, what BlackRock, the largest institutional manager on the planet, is saying is, hey, maybe, just maybe, the path of least resistance for risk assets of various forms might be higher in the short term, but what you're cautioning is that we need to advocate more carefully after the run-up in the first quarter as we balance risk and rewards in all of the families' portfolios that we represent. Is that a fair synopsis?
Yeah, if you were to, you know, hold me to one central theme at this stage of the game, and especially after the rally in the first quarter, it's exactly what you said, that concept of balancing risk and reward, and recognizing that the fundamental backdrop still warrants being invested. We don't think investors should be sitting in cash today in any meaningful way, so we want to be in the markets. It's the time of the game where you want to make sure your risks and your allocations are very diversified, very deliberate. Make sure you know why things are in your portfolio, and making sure that your allocations are appropriately scaled. And that last aspect, appropriately scaled, is where we think clients need to kind of start thinking about maybe re-looking at their allocations because of the stock market run, because of the higher risk areas of the credit markets, high yield junk bonds, for example. They maybe are larger allocations in your overall portfolio. So maybe it's time to start thinking more about kind of what is your long-term strategic allocation, what's your long-term objective, and maybe start to think about kind of dialing down some of these allocations that have had a really good run, maybe kind of locking in some profits, and then looking to diversify into areas like high-quality investment-grade bonds, treasuries, if you find them attractive, and other things like that that can add some ballast should we go back into a period where global growth uncertainty escalates and maybe we see a pause or another drawdown in the markets. Not calling it on the magnitude of the fourth quarter, but as we all know, financial markets can change pretty quickly, and you want to, this now is the time where you want to start building a little bit of insurance or resilience into portfolios.
And I'll be excited at the conclusion to share with you how we're applying some of those topics in our thematic for this year, which we dubbed From Tina, There Is No Alternative, to Tiara, There Is a Real Alternative. But I have a couple of questions that were sent in to us in advance of this call, and I would just like your feedback on that. And the first question came from one of our clients out on the West Coast, and it was, you know, a slowdown in the economy and earnings growth seems probable. You know, we acknowledge that, slower growth, but there's a difference between slower growth and a recession. So how does this slowdown in earnings growth, a.k.a. we're no longer at peak earnings, what exactly do you think that means in terms of stock performance going forward? You touched on it, but be more specific.
Yeah, I think it's important to note that a slowdown in growth, or maybe a better way to phrase it is a moderation or a moderating growth environment, does not mean negative growth, right? And clients that we speak to often forget that, you know, markets can run at, you know, still perform well at 2% growth, just like they may at 4% growth or 3.5% growth, depending upon all the other factors that are going on in the world. And as Craig, you've alluded to, you know, a 2.25%, 2.5% growth environment, when inflation remains muted, when the consumer remains strong, when job growth remains strong, when the rest of the world isn't falling apart and central banks in general are being very accommodative as opposed to hawkish, a 2% growth environment isn't, there's nothing really wrong with that, especially at, you know, in the 10th year of an economic and market cycle. So our view is we're probably going to continue to see growth moderate a bit from here. The first quarter is expected to actually be maybe a little bit stronger than was originally expected. And what happens is when you have these expectations for growth slowdowns, the market and all the analysts who cover all these stocks, what do? They start to downgrade expectations. They start to downgrade the forward-looking or future growth expectations of companies and the overall economy. And when that happens, everyone gets a bit pessimistic, right? But if we do see the event where earnings growth actually comes in a little bit better than expected, what happens? The investment analysts start to actually revise up their estimates, right? And when you see this revision kind of environment, historically speaking, stocks actually tend to do better in that environment because the market kind of capitulates and realizes, wow, things aren't falling off a cliff. Things are maybe a little bit better. So forward-looking earnings, when people are revising up these expectations, actually tend to be pretty strong, and that's one of the catalysts or one of the reasons why we're still staying relatively optimistic on the U.S. economy in particular, because revisions have been so poor and expectations and sentiment got so poor late in the fourth quarter and early in the first quarter that we could potentially see a bit of an upside surprise in earnings growth. But we definitely want to acknowledge the fact that we're probably not going to kind of get back to those peak earnings levels. And remember, everyone, One of the reasons we saw such strong growth for much of 2018 was and late 17 was because of tax reform and the expectations for tax reform. So a lot of that's just kind of burning off. It's more baked in. So now it's kind of back to fundamentals, and we think the bottoms-up corporate fundamentals here in the U.S. Continue to look pretty favorable.
Let's talk geography. Europe seems to be burning at the stake in several places, a.k.a. Brexit, emerging markets, despite the China slowdown. I acknowledge China's making a comeback. What say you in terms of the geographical footprint?
Yeah, it's a great question. For some time and still currently, we do have a bias towards the U.S., as you can probably tell. Just the overarching backdrop just looks better here for all the reasons we've talked about. Europe's interesting in that Europe has, for many, many years, if you all recall, Europe was kind of expected to be to have some green shoots. It was expected to kind of take over from the U.S. And the reason for that was the ECB, the central bank in Europe, was much later in terms of their monetary policy easing, right? And when you had many expectations, and when the Fed actually started to raise rates, Europe was still easing, foot firmly on the monetary and easing gas pedal. And with the recent dovish tilt, not only by the Fed but the ECB, saying that the first rate hike has been moved back, they're going to continue to buy bonds on their balance sheet much longer than they expected to, et cetera. We think that Europe is not as potentially bad as what the market feels. And when you look at a lot of the leading economic indicators that we look at, so things like manufacturing data, shipping data, different types of trade data, sentiment data, et cetera, you're actually starting to see a little bit of a pickup. And a lot of that is because, very similar to what I was saying before about earnings growth, the expectations were just downgraded so far, and the negative sentiment has gotten so bad that any kind of surprise to the upside could be a bit of a catalyst to get Europe going. So in our portfolios, we've added a little bit to Europe from the U.S. Not saying that we like Europe more now than the U.S. It's just, look, the U.S. has had a really tremendous run. Where is there potentially some value, and where might we see a little bit of a catch-up trade? That's potentially in Europe. So moving a little bit, but just dipping our toe there. And then, as you mentioned, China, we don't invest on my team a whole lot in China because there's not a lot of dividends and income generation in China, which my team focuses on. But certainly it's a positive for the overall global economy that you have seen some of these easing measures in China, a commitment to continue to grow their economy, not let it fall down much further than it has. And if we do get some type of positive surprise out of China, don't underestimate the impact that could have on the broader global economy. But one thing I would caution is we're advising clients not to get too overly excited about the potential for some type of trade deal with China. One is, we're optimistic that something gets done, but we're not necessarily optimistic that there's some grand, agreement between the two largest economies in the world that is going to shock or surprise the market on the upside. And the second point would be a lot of what's kind of expected to come out of the agreement, we think a lot of that's been priced in. So in other words, unless there's kind of that big shock announcement that, wow, we got through all of the issues that we've had with each other, you might not see the markets trend up meaningfully higher than where they're at today, or at least sustainably move up over the long term. So we like the prospect for China to continue to ease and get the global economy going, but let's kind of stay level-headed around this grand bargain that some are calling for in terms of trade negotiations, because we're a little bit more skeptical there.
Right. Well, it wouldn't be an investment call if I didn't quickly ask you about the yield curve. We've spoken with clients for decades now that Wealth Management Group has always been focused on the 2 and 10s, but certainly I don't want to be dismissive of the fact that we did see some inversion back in March between the 90s and the 10s. What is the yield curve? What does it mean when the yield curve inverts? And what does BlackRock say the yield curve signals today?
Yeah, great question. And you're right. You can't have a markets related call without talking about the yield curve. You know what? In its most simplistic terms, what the yield curve is basically it's charting or plotting the different yield levels of all the different types of fixed income securities. And it's generally related to treasuries, right? So think about the really short-term notes and paper, if you will. So call it 3-month T-bills, all the way up to 30-year treasuries and on, right? And there's increments all along there. There's 1-year notes, there's 2-year notes, there's 5-year notes, 3-year notes, 10-year, et cetera, right? The most common statistic that we probably see is the 10-year treasury, for example. That's kind of the bellwether that helps set, you hear that in relation to mortgage rates and things like that, right? What happened back in March was the 2-year portion of the yield curve and the 10-year portion of the yield curve inverted. And what that means was simply the yield, you could get a higher yield on the 2-year treasury than you could on the yield, the 10-year treasury. And historically speaking, that has been an indicator for an upcoming recession. And when you look back at past recessions, not all of them, but most of them, the yield curve inverts before a recession. Now, the reason why we are so vocal about this to clients is while the yield curve is a good indicator of a recession, it is a very poor timing indicator of a recession. And on average, you can see stock markets actually continue to perform after a yield curve inverts something on average of like 18 to 24 months for the S&P. And there's been some work by some sell-side banks that actually show you the S&P 500 can actually perform better than its average leading into that yield curve inversion for up to 30 months after the curve inverts. So it's something that we're certainly watching. It's something certainly that is going to draw the attention of people who follow the market. However, remember, it's a very poor timing indicator, and with the fundamental backdrop that we've talked about already, we are not calling for that near-term recession. And even if we were, by no means do we think that you should just pin it all on the inverted yield curve. And we always like to say that that cycles don't die of old age. They die of some type of catalyst or impact forcing a recession, which tends to be the Fed raising rates higher or more quickly than the market can stand, and that leads us into recession. Not every time, but walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, and history tends to rhyme. But this time around, with the dovish tilt by the Fed, and the notes that came out just yesterday, you can clearly see that they have really recognized that growth has slowed down. They're not on autopilot. They do not want to be the ones to push this this cycle into recession after 10 years. And we're looking at the market not in terms of, well, we can perform, we can stay out of recession for the next quarter or two. We're actually thinking kind of the next year or two. There isn't that much of the odds of a recession. And we only put recession odds by the end of 2020 at about 50%. And that's come down from higher levels from a few months ago.
No, I think that's well said. It's interesting to note, too, after that temporary blip of inversion, the yield curve has even been steepening ever so little since. It's very subtle. So to all of the families that we represent, again, what Wealth Management Group has been doing and continues to do is focusing on that thematic of TINA. There is no alternative to to Tiara, there is a real alternative. And again, for us, that means 2019 has been a process of rebalancing risk assets and portfolios, and that comes in a number of forms. But again, the most obvious being that commitment we have to quality, increasing the market capitalization of the securities, aka the stocks that we own, increasing the credit quality of the fixed income, the bonds we own, making sure that the individual companies that are in clients' portfolios have those wider moats, those lower PEs, and of course, always remembering that dividends can have always and will continue to matter. We'll continue to incorporate factor-based investments, aka as the market continues to go up, we'll enjoy participation in what we deem to be those minimum volatility strategies. And as you look back at things that have happened even just since the beginning of the year in those core strategies, just as our guest speaker talked about, we've already done trimming and reduced some of our high yield bond exposure in favor of higher credit quality, specifically asset-backed. In the income portfolios, we've done more of the same, reducing some of those floating rate notes, making sure that we don't have any debt in our portfolios that could run the risk of being covenant light if there is a shock to the system. Instead, again, favoring asset-backed and sovereign debt. In our global ETF portfolios, it's been taking a little bit of the rally, reducing some of the momentum high growth names in favor, again, of higher quality portions of the portfolio going forward. And I'm excited for what lays ahead of us. To all of the families, again, every one of us on the Wealth Management Group team has an unwavering commitment to your family's goals, and it's nothing short of the achievement of those goals that is our primary driver when we come into this office every single day. We're going to stay committed to what we've always been, which is your family's fiduciary advisor. And should you have any questions, should you want to visit, talk more about things that you heard on this call, speak out, work with your relationship manager. We're here to partner with you and your family to achieve those goals. To Daniel Coppins and everybody at our BlackRock family, I thank you for the extension of your time. I thank you for the wisdom that you displayed today as we talked about where markets have been thus far in the first quarter, but more importantly, the focus on what are the opportunities and what are the risks that may lay ahead in 2019. And with that, I'll invite Lisa to go ahead and close the call at this time.
Thank you, Craig. The opinions voiced on this call are for the general information only and are not intended to provide or be construed as providing specific investment advice or recommendations for any individual security. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. BlackRock is not affiliated with LPL Financial or Wealth Management Group. This will end our call today. Thank you.